You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this episode, we've got some special guests. Joining us from Small Beans, we have Adam Ganser. Welcome, Adam.
Woo!
Thanks for having me.
And Michael Swaim.
Hey, listen, I'm a dark cloud guy. I don't know why I'm here.
Hey, me too! All right, cool. We got Brian here as well.
Hi, I am... Not anything wrong with Dark Cloud. I've just never played it.
You're an Okami boy. I can feel it.
As of recently, yes.
Yes. Nice. We actually did Okami just a couple seasons ago. So.
Just cut out, you know, 80% of what Eason says, and I am on board.
Not a Zelda-like, but a game that makes me feel similar feelings while I play it.
Yeah.
Does it really?
I think we came to the conclusion that it was an action and adventure game. They're just separate.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
They segment out the two things. We're not here to talk about Okami. We're here to talk about Zelda. But first, why don't you guys go ahead and introduce yourselves to our audience. What is Small Beans and what are other things you guys do on the internet?
Who are you?
Adam, do you want to go first?
I'll go first. Yeah, I'll go first. All right, Adam Ganser, the first of the two guests. We are part of a podcast called One Upsmanship. You might have heard of it. It's on the internet. It's from the iHeart Network. We talk about video games and decide which games, if any, should stay on a celestial hard drive that we launch into space for the aliens to remember us when we inevitably die as a species. I believe that's what we stipulated to, Mike, as the thesis of our show.
Is that correct?
The noble cause.
But that's not all. Michael Swaim chiming in as the second guy and therefore sort of the main act that the bill was leading to ultimately. We also co-run an entire podcast network called Small Beans. You can find it just by pointing your device at the words Small Beans wherever you get podcasts. And we do like a dozen podcasts on there about a wide range of topics from movies to news to TV to friendship to depression to dinosaurs. Lots of different things.
In that order. It's a real roller coaster.
Jurassic, Triassic, or Cretaceous?
Well, to clue you into the level of sophistication that show sort of dives into, it's called What Dinosaur Real Good? And to answer your question directly, I don't know. Yeah.
You could have said Cretaceous and just been, I'm a T-Rex bro, and that would have been
Jurassic.
Cool.
Right.
The third one, whatever you said.
Well, I mean, it's all about the KT extinction, so, you know, everybody knows that.
Yeah,
I think a mammal even slipped in, so we're blasphemous from a paleontological point of view.
Yeah. They're around. They're scurrying around somewhere. It's fine.
So, yeah, go check out all that stuff. Anything else to talk about? Other things you guys do on the internet?
Adam hit it.
I'm so sorry, Mike. We make videos occasionally, which you can check out on the Patreon, to which Small Beans is attached. Patreon.com/Small Beans. We are screenwriters. We are filmmakers. We are podcasters. We are jack of all trades and masters of all those trades. As the saying goes.
We're fathers. We're sons. We bleed for you. We die for you. Follow me.
What
to
else
freedom.
Do you want?
That's
what
all,
else
man.
Do you want from us?
I don't know what else we could possibly claim to do, but yeah.
You can do all that, but tonight we're Zelda fans.
Shing.
And tonight
gladly.
We're Ocarina fans. I think that was the game we decided to open up with.
That's what I was told.
Yeah. I think I'm an Ocarina fan, yeah.
Yeah, we took a big risk and said, can we love on Ocarina of Time? Took a huge risk and said, that's
yeah, we want We really wanted to drop in through the skylight with your fans and just blast them with a hot take.
Here's the thing, guys. You're the first ones to bring Ocarina to this. We've had a number of guests on here to talk about their favorite Zelda games.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people take that as an opportunity to bring what they see as like their dark horse favorite, mm-hmm. right? And nobody wants to just be like, well, it's obviously Ocarina.
I think in the last few years, and I don't know when this happened, but I noticed that like it's just not cool to like Ocarina anymore. Which like, you know, people are just like, oh, Majora's Mask is absolutely my favorite because it's just like, oh, it's cool to like the counterculture one, you
right.
know, it's over
like
there
like
being edgy
the Beatles,
and stuff.
It's like the Beatles being your favorite band. And of course the Deku Tree is George. I think we can all agree.
We all know that.
Best songs, you know, secret best right. songs, Deku Tree.
I think you're probably right that people want to dance around, but hey. Adam and Mike are nothing if not liable to just take that low-hanging fruit and pluck it and run with that, baby. But it's true. I think there's plenty to say about Ocarina. And you know, very clear reasons that it's still among my favorites. I assume you've covered Breath of the Wild already at this point, given the title of the podcast. But you know,
it was our first game. It was what launched the show,
as it ought to be.
And we're like, we got to the end of that game. We're like, this is fun.
Let's keep talking about Zelda
at length. So I think that slot being taken, this is the only other way I could go. Adam may have a different opinion though.
Well, if we're talking about like what our favorite or best
personal favorite,
personal favorite, still Breath for me. And I think it's because I like the open world thing in general a little better than I like a more curated experience, which I would say Ocarina is by contrast. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, it's pretty common now to see Ocarina and Breath of the Wild sort of vying for best of the franchise conversations when they're not being held by hipsters who have bad opinions. Like when Regos who have normal ideas get together and talk, these are the two that people compare.
When you don't have your ego wrapped up in being contrarian, like these hipsters.
I know for my two co-hosts, and for like actually my best friend growing up, Jeremy. He likes Majora better. And I've found that people who played it when it was new and were kids and were able to spend a lot of time with it, you know, developed a greater appreciation for that game that I think is really hard to get if you come to it afterward.
Yeah, that game is weird as fudge now, man. That game is real weird if you haven't played it. Not that it's bad. It's very good. But like, as a person who never played it until like, I don't know, a month and a half ago, I tried it on a stream.
Oh,
and I was like,
okay.
This is extremely alienating for a Zelda game. Not that it's bad. I see why it's good. I see why people like it. But I think, and I hope I can claim this without being a total jerk, I think a measure of objectivity that's not through the nostalgia glasses will show you that Ocarina is generally way more approachable as a game than Majora's Mask.
Oh, absolutely. Now, like, this is, I have said multiple times, longtime listeners will know that what I love in Zelda is when it gets weird. Like, my favorite, I don't ever count Breath of the Wild as my favorite because I think it's cheating, because I think it's just one of the greatest games ever made. And so, like, it doesn't count. It's, like, just suddenly descended from the heavens, and I'm just like, well, that's not a video game. That's a whole other level. But
yeah,
we didn't know we had to
say that until someone was like, well, which one do you guys think is the best? And we're like, you wanted to say Breath of the Wild so that you could say, oh, well, no, you're wrong, that one's not really Zelda. We're like, oh, sorry, we just thought it was understood. This is like the one of the best things ever made, right, guys?
I think that's why Majora's actually has such appeal. It's got the double whammy, right? Because it's kind of a deep cut, it is contrarian, and yet it's in the shadow of Ocarina. It's adjacent to one that you know is a very safe bet as best of the franchise.
It plays exactly like my favorite game of all time, well, until Breath of the Wild came out. So, like, it still controls exactly like my favorite thing in the world, but
what I was going to say is that My favorite Zelda is Link's Awakening because I just like when Zelda gets weird.
Oh.
And that's why I also like Majora's Mask, is because it's just weird. It's different than a lot of other games where Ocarina, for the most part, has sort of a medieval setting, right? Your fantasy action kind of game, but more of a kid-friendly version of that. Not to argue about, like, it's still one of the best games of all time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're trying to rank these and I'm trying to defend my position on this, that's just sort of my go to. And I
understand.
I
understand why.
Step away.
I understand. And I will not make jokes about that. I'll just say it's sort of like when people ask me my favorite film. Right. I can't say things like The Godfather. The Godfather is objectively one of the best movies ever made. Right. It's a fantastic
right.
movie. Or Citizen Kane. I need to say something weird like The Lighthouse. Okay, why The Lighthouse? Because
Lighthouse is pretty good.
Lighthouse is super chill, bros, if you haven't checked that one out. That's your ocarina, by the way. I say something like that because I like a thing that's iterative on the main thing, because the main thing is like, yeah, of course. Of course Godfather's one of the best. I need a weird
right.
thing that interests me specifically, right?
Also,
and I don't
the current
think that's
conversation,
a wrong answer, by the way.
The conversation, it's like a better offer for a conversation. It's just more interesting than going,
yeah.
oh, Citizen Kane, yeah. reinvented,
sure, yeah,
because he moved the camera and did all the shots. No, I know, it's great.
Cool sled.
I get it, Ebert. I get it, okay?
He destroyed that room.
That's a very important shot. Yes, right.
Yeah, he's old.
No one
he's
ever
angry.
Tried that before.
Yeah.
I guess I
go with like Doctor Strangelove as that's a brilliant movie, and it's also weird and strange and mm-hmm. yeah. So like I think you're right. It's more fun to not just immediately pick the AFA's or AFI's. Is it AFI?
It is AFI. Yeah.
It is AFI. I never remember because that stupid band.
It's a fire inside, yes. Girls Not Grey.
But AFI, yeah, like, you know, I don't go to the top pick that they have to say that's my movie.
Yeah.
No.
Like Duck Soup or something.
It really is the Zelda of movies, though. And I think we can all agree the Deku Tree is Sergeant Ripper, whatever his name was. I'm sorry. I saw a
George.
Second beat. I had to go for it. But I do want to say, I think there's a legitimate conversation to be had, or maybe I'm just wrong, that because Breath of the Wild also has incredible innovations, but I do think they come in the wake of and are built off innovations that I see the connections more clearly than something that's interesting about both Ocarina and Mario 64, which we talked about at length on One-Upsmanship, is they were set the task of translating an existing two-dimensional game into three dimensions for the first time.
Yep.
That's just such an inspiring challenge that I do think there's an argument to be made that Ocarina is more foundational, influential, even possibly innovative for the time.
Absolutely.
Because
it
had to be.
You know, I wonder if we know that stuff because that was just, everyone was talking about like how Z targeting was used or the way that they decided to make the game play the way it does. And like in a way that like I think we just sort of like, oh, yeah, that's just common. Everyone knows that, right?
Sorry, but there didn't have to be locking on to enemies. Because of Ocarina, there's locking on to enemies as a thing.
Also, contextual button pressing, a thing that we were shocked to learn was original to Zelda, according to an interview with Miyamoto. I think the thing about Breath of the Wild that people don't talk about too much is that Breath of the Wild is iterative specifically on Ocarina of Time narratively. And also in terms of features, right? Like the things that you can physically do, those things are like more directly tied to Ocarina than any of the other Zeldas that came between the two, right? Like so.
How so?
So Ocarina of Time is, and this is Adam's opinion, so take it for what it's worth. Ocarina of Time is,
I would say, that's copywritten.
That's right. If you say it,
yeah,
now,
we have to clip
you
this
owe
part
me
out.
Money. So Ocarina of Time is sort of the story of Zelda, and they decided they're going to ink this one, right? Because there had been several other versions of stories for Zelda, as minimal or as obtuse as they were, but they've kind of kept all the story beats and pieces of Zelda lore that were decided at Ocarina of Time, right? Things like the Temple of Time, or the themes, or how the Master Sword works, or, you know, the role of the Triforce that's sort of cyclical, and the three gods and all that stuff. Are there elements from other Zeldas? Totally. But they kind of inked the canon at Ocarina of Time. And from there, they fractured the timelines depending on whether or not they decided Link wins with the battle with Ganon or not, right? And Breath of the Wild very much draws on that history and is playing against the cycle. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, the Zelda story, yada, 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 the Zelda story. Now imagine Link lost and it's 100 years later. You know, and that's interesting about it.
Now, Adam, you said the secret word, and that is timeline. We don't have to spend much time on this, but you know, if you're here on our show, Adam, Mike, pro or anti timeline?
Am I against a timeline at all? What's this question?
Against the Zelda timeline, the idea that these games are connected.
I would move it around this way. Like, do you care or not that Nintendo says here's the timeline?
I want Mike to guess my answer, and I would like to guess Mike's answer. Can we do that? Okay, Mike, you guess.
Yeah.
Mike, you guess mine first. Mike, you guess mine first.
I go
first? Yeah.
Okay. I would guess that you don't care, and you view it as a cyclical retelling of a core story, not a unified timeline.
You are 100% correct. I would guess that Mike doesn't think there's enough story to think there is a timeline, that they basically are starting over from scratch almost every time with repeated beats because they don't want to make a big narrative out of this.
See, it's like poetry. They rhyme.
Yeah, it's very Lucas-esque. Yes, that's absolutely true. But I would also add that I do care a lot. It pisses me off.
Oh, it makes you mad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I care passionately that it's not a consistent timeline. It bothers me to no end.
Right.
But I
think
you're
both right. I think both of you are right.
I mean, it's a tale of souls.
Well, see, there's two different timelines here.
There's
two different timelines. There's the Mike timeline, where this is what it makes, this is what that is, and this is the Adam timeline.
Of course.
I think it's fair to say Nintendo doesn't care.
Miyamoto doesn't care. Yeah. Miyamoto is anti-canon. Doesn't. He's always been against storytelling and canon. And so it wasn't until, you know, decades later that someone was just like, we're going to put out a book. Should we mention how these stories are similar? And they're like, yeah, I'll just draw a little family tree to these things.
Yeah.
How do these work? I don't know. He died. I don't know.
It also does feel like they're employing a franchise-wide strategy that I've seen other franchises employ, and I really like it. Which is, I mean, Star Wars is doing it now. They started very timidly, but then stuff was successful and they're doing it more and more, which is the main line. And I think Adam's spot on. Ocarina defined their tentpole episodes, let's say. And they're like, okay, that's the grounded in reality. It ramps towards a climactic battle with Ganon. That formula is always the tentpole. And then in between, they do stuff like Wind Waker. They do stuff like, I mean, it predates, but you mentioned Link's Awakening, which of course is a self-contained short story, just using that character.
Right.
I think that's what we'll see more and more.
Some Link to the Past fans would yell at us, but there are definitely like things structurally that are set up there. But you're right about a lot of the lore bits. I think maybe Ocarina was the first time they gave us enough to like really clamp down on.
Yeah, they had actual cinema sequences, right? And cutscenes.
It's the first one that feels like a movie, and that's why it feels that way to us.
Yeah.
You're right that the plot elements are in Link to the Past for sure at a rudimentary degree, but since it's, you know, text on a screen and a top-down view, it just feels different than, or at least when I was growing up and Ocarina hit me, I'm like, oh, Link's real now because it feels like a TV show. Yeah.
I have a pet.
Were we all in middle school when this game came out?
No, I was nearly out of high school. In
fact. Okay. All right. I'm just
aging in reverse. Thanks.
I didn't want to ask you how old you were, but
I'm old as swear words. Very old. I haven't.
What
actually,
is the
I
year?
What is year? What year?
Of Ocarina. Yeah.
1998, I believe. 1998.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'd be 13.
Yeah. I have a pet theory that Nintendo had to do so much thinking about the branding and narrative of their characters when they moved into 3D that they sort of were like, these decisions are going to be like quasi-permanent. Like, I know they did it with Mario, for instance, right? Mario, they decided to give him a voice, and they decided to give him kind of a home base, and like, what is the nature of that relationship? They like really cemented it.
And his palette of jumps was largely refined and chosen.
And they're like, these are the jumps he does, right? And to a degree, I think Ocarina of Time is the same for Zelda. Maybe because it was successful, but I think largely because they really had to make a lot of thoughtful decisions about what translates between those two, you know, 2D and 3D, right? Like, and I don't think they wanted to keep doing that every time.
Sure. I did want to just circle back a question I had for both of you. Mike, you can start off. Like, when did you first play Ocarina?
I remember it very clearly because it was the first time I'd ever been in a part of a store that is not, you know, backstage, so to speak. And when you are 13, that feels like something. Like, I was like, ooh, we're not supposed to be here. But my dad's friend worked at Toys R Us, and, you know, the Ocarina was all I wanted, and told us that it was completely sold out. There was no way to get it. And I was like crestfallen for days. And then finally this friend said, like, I have one, not in a package, just the cartridge. And I have it like hidden in the back of the Toys R Us for Mike. So on Christmas Day or the day before, because I think they were closed, I think on Christmas Eve day, my dad took me to the Toys R Us and we like wandered around the aisles. And then my friend who worked there,
look at these
like,
bikes,
opened a door and was like, come on. Here. Yeah. And they're like, just act like you belong here. It's fine. And we walked back there and they pulled out. It just is seared in my mind, a gold cartridge, which I did not know it was going to be. And that was my, like, the simple power of a shiny thing to a young man. It really wowed me. And
you're like, you're telling friends at school, you're just like, it was made of real gold.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Didn't you have to send away for the gold one? How did that work?
I think they had a few copies everywhere that were gold. But not
but I think it was the promotional one, and that's why they got it, is because it was the floor model that kids were playing with the plastic dome over it.
Nice.
They yoinked it, yeah.
Yes.
I'm just picturing some knockoff cartridge that you have that says, like, Zordo on it or something like that. I've got a cartridge for you, kid.
Man.
Here you go. If you want Zelda, here.
If Zardoz was ever made into a game, I would want it to be N64 era. That would be an incredible
game. Of course. The Tale of Zordan. Such a good game.
I think your final battle was different than the one we're talking about, but that sounds cool.
So Adam's a little older. He was like, I was leaving the courthouse after my second divorce. I grabbed Ocarina, punched a guy in the jaw.
I got that in a pack of smokes on my way out.
Grabbed my second pack of Dunhill for the day. But I do believe I was working at a Blockbuster at the time, actually. Blockbuster Video, RIP. So I just took one when they came in early and purchased it. Before the rest of the children got theirs, and it was wonderful, and I never felt any sadness about it. It was great. Never struggled to get it. Had it on day one. Loved it.
So, do you remember what was the hype for it at the time? Like, because we still had, you know, for our younger listeners, we would only be able to learn about these things through magazines. Magazines are tiny books made of thin paper.
Just knew it was coming because this game kept getting delayed. And so, like, well, eventually there will be a Zelda.
There were commercials. When this game...
That's true.
This
yes.
game was advertised on television. It was a phenomenon. That I know. Like, I remember that.
Yeah, it was off the charts. I wanted it with all of my craven child heart.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knew Legend of Zelda. It wasn't like they were establishing the franchise. And Mario 64, again, was such a great game that expectations went way up for what they're going to do with Zelda. So, yeah, there was not a child between ages 10 and 18 that did not know about this
game. I actually had flashbacks to it during the cyberpunk hype. So I don't think it's unfair to say that it was kind of equivalent to that, where, I mean, like, my partner, who cares not about games at all, you know, will see me getting excited about a game maybe once every 5 to 7 years and ask why. And I'll be like, well, the consensus is just that it's going to be the best video game so far, you know, quotes, like whatever that means. But like, it's right. the new one that's supposed to change everything. And that was the auspice around Ocarina. I remember very clearly. I was a GamePro guy. It got straight fives. The kid's hair was shooting out. He was having so much fun factor. And died of radiation poisoning a few years later. Sad story.
Yeah, when he was excited, he looked like he'd been electrocuted.
Yeah, electrocuted. Like
right,
cartoon.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, they do that every time, too. That you think just they would take one picture, but you know, every game that's good, he has to get electrocuted.
All right, hook me up, boys.
Stick your finger in the joy socket. Here you go, buddy.
But it was definitely the one of the year, Cyberpunk style, where everyone was like, oh, yeah, of the last 3 to 5 years, this is the big one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in a year that was big anyway.
Right, yeah.
That's right.
I didn't actually play Ocarina until probably like 2001 or 2002, and a friend lent it to me. I didn't even know anything about Zelda at the time. I played like WWF on my N64, like or Extreme G, and it's like I only played like sports games and racing games and all that. And then I had a friend in middle school that was just like, "You need to play this game." And then I used a Game Shark and broke it. And I was like, "This game's stupid." And then he was like, "Well, why do you think it's stupid?" And he was just like, I told him, I was like, "Yeah, I tried to do this. I used my Game Shark," and he was like, "Don't use a Game Shark." And I was like, "Whatever." And then I borrowed it, and then I borrowed it back from him and played it without it. And I was like, "Oh, this is the best game ever, and this is part of my life now. Thank you."
We took turns punching each other for a couple hours until I replaced that controller. Wow.
Yeah, I spent so much time with Zelda 1, but it was the equivalent of someone who's put like 400 hours into a GTA game, but only done like 3 of the missions. Whereas I just didn't quite know. Yeah, I didn't quite know what I was doing, but I had a blast. Like just trying to find like a new screen. Like, oh, I've never seen this screen before. Who's that guy? I bet he's gonna kill me. And so that, you know, I didn't get into A Link to the Past, and I never owned it really, but yeah, it took like a little while of me playing Ocarina for me to like have that moment of like, oh, when can I not ever stop playing this game, please? You know, I definitely got grounded for a while for just playing it way too much, and then I had to sneak downstairs and play it. So that was great.
Yeah, 2 is the further back you go. I mean, forgive me if you've covered this on the pod at some point already, but Miyamoto talks about getting the idea from his parents just sending him out into the woods unsupervised for, you know, long periods sure, of his childhood. Yeah. And like stuff you would imagine, like get a stick, it's a sword. And in the interview, literally says stuff like, and I would like fall into holes and stuff.
Fall
and
into
I think,
holes.
Oh, what if it was like a cave and I had to fight bugs and stuff?
And there was a cow down there.
And I really think 1 and 2 really have that whimsical feeling of just wandering around. You're like, oh, there's a hole. I'll go in it. Oh, this boogan's coming at me. I'll slash at it.
Well, 1 really does. Like, I just replayed 1, actually. Mm-hmm. And 1
almost
is
no
like
clues or guidance whatsoever. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, even the clues they do give are super obscure and esoteric. And you're like, what is going on? And I mean, this is not a fresh observation, but I think that's another reason why Breath of the Wild is my favorite of this game franchise, because that feeling of just sort of like, I don't know what to do and I'm just going to hang around and see what there is over here. Breath of the Wild is the first game that really captured it since those first two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ocarina, again, is a lot more curated, you know?
I mean,
at that
say
point, they had locked
Breath
into a
Wild,
formula,
but
yeah. Yeah, no, go ahead.
That's not the episode for it. No. I also credit Breath of the Wild for taking maybe the only thing that still gives me a rush about the Ubisoft formula, because Ubisoft invented many things that were at one point innovative, but has since driven them into the ground of like, still fine, but the thrill is gone. Except,
you could just say that about the entire company. Yeah,
synchronizing a location and unlocking the map with a big sweeping shot of the world.
Oh, yeah,
that
baby.
Still gets me, especially so if your world is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I love that Breath of the Wild, that's all they lifted was that one thing, is that you climb up these giant spires and see everything laid out before you. Mm-hmm. That's good, Good call.
Yeah. Yeah, they took the best thing from Assassin's Creed. It's like, oh yeah, that is the best thing. Well done.
But then instead of like marking your all the stuff on your map, they give you the option to like tag stuff yourself, and so it creates.
Oh yeah, they
my favorite thing.
Made it even better. Yeah.
Yeah, my favorite thing about that game is like I need to get to the tallest thing I can around me. So that I can look for more stuff because there's just stuff everywhere.
And gliding down versus jumping into a bale of hay? Come on, forget about it. Like, what an upgrade.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah, gliding is, we could go on forever. I do want to say about Ocarina of Time, one of the things that doesn't translate now, but definitely translated when the game first came out, is this actually was still an open-ended feeling game. Like, it felt like it was a gigantic world to explore, even though you play it now and you're like, really? They didn't.
You could control the day-night cycle. He has so many different powers at the time. It felt like
Hyrule
this guy can
Field
do anything.
Huge.
Yeah. Right. It's huge. Yeah. I mean, like, it's funny to think of it as huge now because you play it like, it takes me a minute to get across it. That's like one street in GTA 5, man. You know what I mean?
But daytime goes, you know, like it's like 18 hours in the game, man. It's huge.
It's true. But again, we have to like remember they're training us on open world games. This is open world game training wheels, you know? So like Ocarina has to be designed in such a way that it both feels like an open world and is open to exploration, but it's guided enough that you don't get lost. Because we don't have that language as drilled into our brains in 1998 as gamers like we do now. You know, even young gamers now have that drilled into their brain because they've played enough video games like it. But there weren't games like it then, you know?
I'm glad Nintendo figured that out eventually because they sat in that mindset for like a decade and a half of like the, man, what if they don't know what they're doing? And like, no, by this point, people are, it's okay. You can take the training wheels off on some of this
stuff. Well, it's like if you play Skyward Sword, right, which I'm sure you guys have either talked about or will. Skyward Sword is the ultimate, sort of narrowing the Zelda landscape down to meet a certain set of criteria that aren't the best criteria. And in a way, it's like because that game is so frustratingly restrictive, that's part of why Breath of the Wild is so great. You know what I mean? It's like because they edged us a lot. with Skyward Sword, and also I think they were like, we better go back to base after that game. They're like, we better fix this, you know.
It does take some risks in that game, and I don't think they were the right risks, but you can see them working on Breath of the Wild in there.
Absolutely.
Sure. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk more about Ocarina and I'm sure just a lot of other Zelda stuff.
Do you have Gold Skulltellas taking up space in your attic? Gold Skulltellas you don't want anymore. Gold Skulltellas you can't use anymore because the bubble burst. We will give you cash. Cash. That's right. Cash for your Gold Skulltellas. We're cash for GoldSkulltellas.com.
Every time I go up in my attic, they're always like, help me. Help me. I'm a monster. But I don't really know what to do with them.
Get rid of those.
Are your children spider-shaped and ugly and in need of fixing? Get Gold Skulltellas. It'll fix your kids right up.
Call now for your free consultation. Use offer code GOLDSKULLTELLUS for 89% off.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So we are back. I think there's something that we haven't talked about yet that has to be talked about if we're talking about Ocarina, and that is the music. I mean, it's got an instrument in the name of it. We've got to talk about the music. I think that so many people that have played this, that will stick with them forever. Like the ability to freely play songs whenever you want and then feeling like you're a real musician when you do it in the right order and Link plays a full song and you're like, I did that.
Although I must point out, well, it's interesting that the way, you know, things go in a flow, like that harkens all the way up to like The Last of Us Part Two, running Ellie through the guitar strings until it pieces sure, together the whole thing. But also, I got to point out that there's a game I loved as a kid that I vividly remember. I don't think I still ever have. I vividly remember that I got to the final boss and eventually just beat my head against the wall and gave up and was like, well, I've seen most of the game. It's called Wonder Boy in Monster World. Or maybe Monster Land.
Oh, love that one.
But he carries an ocarina that you play by pressing the buttons in a particular order to yield certain effects. And I always wondered if there was a connection there because, I mean, gaming is iterative and it definitely predates it because it's like a 2D side-scrolling adventure. But well, regardless, that, you know, are they're looking around the palette of things that exist, lifting the best, inventing some new ones. Potentially, these things have nothing to do with each other. But I do think it's interesting how... even things we take as, well, they did that. That has to be uniquely them. Gaming more than any other medium, I think, builds on itself, borrows from itself. Mm-hmm. Film does it with a lot of quoted shots, but your average person who's imbibing the film is not going to recognize that connection. Whereas in games, I do think all gamers who play multiple games recognize that they lift from each other, the mechanics, they like swap around, and different games are basically like assemblages of different mechanics in a different order,
right?
With hopefully a couple new things that the team invented.
Yeah, people make entire social media accounts based on pointing out which things keep stealing other things or sure. whatever. When Breath of the Wild came out, everyone was like, oh, they played Dark Souls and took a bunch of ideas from it and why am I blanking on their FromSoft was like, yeah, we also played their games and took a lot.
Yeah, you don't think
Dark Souls.
You don't think we are influenced at all by Nintendo? Yeah, like everyone.
The Legend of Zelda? Yeah.
Oh no.
It's a legend. Yeah. Of course we've taken from it.
We made 3D Game Heroes. Yeah. We've played Zelda.
It's an interesting thing in entertainment that a lot of like auteur filmmakers or just auteur creators often pair up with a composer and make very like memorable pieces of media, both musically and as like story. So like a great example of that, Spielberg and John Williams, right? Like, you know, many of the themes you remember from the 80s come from that partnership, right? Or recently Christopher Nolan and Hans Zimmer, right? A lot of
Burton
music.
And Elfman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Burton and Elfman. That's another one. This is the result of a collaboration like that, in that it's Miyamoto and Koji Kondo, who basically are the inventors and soundscape creators for Mario and Zelda, and it seems clear to me like Koji Kondo, if I'm not mispronouncing his name, was like they clearly brought him onto this game because it's like we need our best team. You know what I mean? Like this is our A team. We're going for it on this. And I would say there's at least three or four songs in the game that are now inextricable from Zelda's canon, when Zelda already had a very memorable theme. You know, like the Legend of Zelda song, everybody knows it. You hum it and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah. But there's like three or four songs here that are like...
He Come to Town.
Yeah. Are like inextricably linked with Zelda. Like the Song of Time and then Zelda's Lullaby and some others.
Right. I was going to say Zelda's Lullaby because that one still gets... You can... We have played... In this show, we've played everything except for Link Between Worlds right now. Mm-hmm. And just coming off of Skyward Sword... And I was gushing over the music in there, and you can just hear all these references to things. And Zelda's Lullaby is one that definitely sticks in there for me, at least. It's triggering for me when I'm hearing it. And I'm just like, oh, I can tell they're pulling from that.
100%. And also, Zelda's music is a little bit sad and wistful, and that's part of what makes it so great. You know, that it's ultimately...
Mario 2, that's a Kondo thing.
Yeah, he's got a little, just a tiny bit of like a morose... view on things at his best, like at his best,
and not bleak sad,
while still like, being just catchy as all get out.
Like, yeah, it's like your heart is full sad because you're watching a sunset or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, I describe
and like not only not only is he like a partner composer with Miyamoto on these series, but like with Super Mario Brothers 1, like the sound design was happening simultaneously, like as like it, there wasn't he wasn't off doing something. He was a part of for that. He might as well have been a game designer because he was helping them design the music. The sound effects are all in the same key as the music.
That freaking
stuff like that. So like
jump sound. Yeah. As I die, it'll probably be the last neuron firing in my brain. Boing. Like the you know, I can't even do it. But the Mario jump is. It's in to the fact that it was in tune with the key of the melodies. That's such a cool detail. I didn't know.
Yeah, and like I don't, he was never that situation never happened again, really. Mm-hmm. But you know, it was a small enough team that like, yeah, no, the music is going to be really important. Like, come here.
Yeah, I like this. The credits rap where Sheik explains the events of the game.
The credits rap? Where wait, what?
I joke sometimes.
No, it's
he,
true.
He brings a full megabit and he sips from it one at a time.
Sorry, I can't always yes and immediately when my brain's thinking about something
that's
else.
Okay. That's okay. He has a little verse that went something like this. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do it.
Who's that blonde
that's
guy?
That's the real power it's move. Late. Yeah, put someone on the spot. Why don't you?
Yeah. That's correct. The music
that was
great.
When I was playing for the show when we covered this game. My partner walked to the room when Sheik was standing there telling me something. Or no, wait, it was when Rudo was standing there. Never mind. Just walked to the room and went, "She is stacked." Sorry, never mind.
Speaking of surprise character reveals, I got to say, I mean, different tone, different game for sure. But there was a Metroidiness about it to in the sense that I don't trying to put myself back in my 13-year-old mind. I alluded to this earlier, but I'm really meditating on like it's like a Swiss Army knife, which was the coolest thing you could get when you're 8, 9, 10. I was continuously surprised that Link could do an additional thing, and they paced them out so well with no warning that that's going to happen. It's like, oh, I got a slingshot now. Oh, I got a horse now? I can control the very sky, like whether it's day or night now.
I am a god.
I'm gonna make it rain.
I never knew what the bottom of the depth of the systems was, and it's deeper than it needed to be. All the different ways you can use jars that you emergently discover.
Yep.
I can keep a fairy in a jar. This changes everything. That was like
fish
a huge
here?
Moment for me.
Are you kidding me?
And they really keep giving you cool powers. They don't even fully explore a lot of them. Like
till late game, like mid game, late game. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned on our podcast, like the lens of truth is a really cool power that they barely use because it's like, well, it's toward the end of the game. They just don't have time to weave it in, you know. But it's like, man, you could build an entire game on that one mechanic, and you know, it's like just thrown in there at the end. Or like the floating boots.
You could spend weeks just running around the whole game with that thing on and off looking for stuff.
Devs have.
Like
you could argue that's the seed of everything from like Legacy of Kain, Soul Reaver, to Detective Vision in the Arkham games.
Yep.
You know, just the idea that, what's really cost effective? You flip a switch and we keep all the same art assets, but they change in some way.
Yep.
You increase the transparencies on it. That's all we're going to do.
Eagle vision and
Assassin's
Creed.
Load in one
Creed.
New thing. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Assassin's Creed stole the same idea, you know? Lots and lots of games.
I mean, you guys have also made me think about like some of the ways of breaking the game. Brian is over on a speedrunning podcast, and do you guys follow the speedrunning at all? For this game or any other games?
When I was at IGN, I worked at length on a project, at a lot of sites like IGN and the places I've worked historically. They end up picking a title that's good for the algorithm or whatever. So if anyone listening wants to find it, I think the full title is The Civil War That Almost Blew Up Speedrunning. But I just wanted it to be an exploration of speedrunning and the introduction of TAS or tool assisted speedrunning. And I got to speak with a lot of the GDQ guys and it was really interesting project to work on. Ever since then I follow both, but I am uniquely interested in TAS and lately obsessed with Titanfall 2 task because it's like, right, it's like, so tool-assisted speedrunning is a computer doing it as efficiently as humanly possible. And in Titanfall, the parkour system is so good that it's just like, zoom, zoom, shoot, shoot, zoom, 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 shoot, I'm done. Whole level complete. I love watching those.
Titanfall,
but of course,
is bonkers. Yeah. Titanfall speedruns are crazy.
Of course, there's a separate appreciation of both. Then, you know, under human power speedruns are great as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I finally got, my partner is also a programmer and didn't see the appeal in TAS. And I was like, it's like you take everything you know about literally how the game was built by the people who made it.
Mm-hmm.
And use anything you can to like, it is just the game itself doing what it was allowed to do with the code, and I think it's wild. And
right.
Yeah.
So right, for example, I think it's understood, and correct me if I'm wrong, that in Ocarina specifically, you can traverse more quickly by like doing this backwards shuffle over and over than you can mm-hmm. by running or jumping forward. So if you watch high-end Ocarina speedrunners, they do the whole game backwards, going like hop, 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 because it's right. just slightly faster.
Well, I mean, to walk backwards is faster, but then there's also extended slides and extended super slides, which if you drop a bomb at the right time, you will just... just gained a bunch of speed and just stand there yeah. and move backwards.
Speedrunning is a delicate art to consume because on the one hand, a basic bee like me gets real annoyed watching hup, 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 hup for like an hour, you know what I mean, or like 30 minutes. But then,
right.
but I'll see something like the speedruns for Elden Ring, for instance, that just were pure delight, pure cotton
like watching
candy
magic
delight.
Show.
Yeah, just like this guy squats here and now he flies like Superman to the end. Thank you.
Yeah.
You made it.
Have
X,
you seen,
you know?
Gans, have you ever seen a really good Super Mario 64?
Yes, I've seen.
I think you'd like that.
I love okay. that. I also, of
those
course.
Those feel like magic.
There's Super Mario 3 ones where like the dude only gets a 1-up the entire game because he's hopping on every
Oh, never touches
thing.
The ground.
And it's like,
I
dude,
love that one.
You beautiful wizard.
Interestingly, the most famous of those where the guy is doing the like the wooden log train level and he never touches the ground.
Right.
That is the core of the video I was talking about.
Right.
That caused mm-hmm. a bunch of problems mm-hmm. because it wasn't translated from Japanese and it's one of the very first TASs and people thought he was trying to pass it off as having done it himself and he didn't. Mm-hmm. The computer did that. Which is also okay. As
sure.
long as it's clearly labeled as that, it's sure. its own thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
which I didn't know at the time. And I think it was the first speedrun thing I had ever seen. I, of course, was obsessed with my Super Mario Brothers one time, like my entire life. I don't know why I think it was just a way to get like older kids to take me seriously. Cause sometimes they would just be like, you're little. And I'm like, no, I'm 5 and I own this game. I would like to play Nintendo with you guys, you 8-year-olds. Mm-hmm. So I'd be like, no, I can beat SMB1 pretty quick.
Speedrunning has the problem of, it's the, in a way, it's sort of like the last way to enjoy the game. It's like, cause once you're like, really the point of speedrunning is like taking the machine apart to see its parts and like putting mm-hmm. it together in a way that's no longer what the machine was meant to do. So, like, for me, when I'm getting into speedrunning, it's because I've literally consumed everything in this game that I'm interested in. So now I want to see,
as
what do
intended,
we do if we
right.
break it? You know, and sometimes sometimes that's interesting. But I think, you know, it's not an obsession for me because I like games the way they were made, you know, to do.
Or the lure of starting a new game is stronger than breaking it apart
yeah.
to a molecular level.
For
the
me.
Game you're currently on, yeah.
For me.
Yeah, you know? I think, for me, I was tinkering around with this with Ocarina, circling back to Zelda, I do have memories of doing things like seam walking, where you would find some little spot in the geometry that you could get Link up on, and you could go up to a place that you weren't supposed to. This was almost all in me trying to find the Triforce. I knew the Triforce was in this game somewhere, and I was like, I will find it. And eventually, like, seeing some of the speedrun stuff, and it sort of, speedrunning doesn't click with me for the most part, but every once in a while I see something where I'm like, oh, I like that because I'm very familiar with this here and you're doing something I didn't realize you could do. And so like breaking the game down that way was always interesting for me in Ocarina, especially when we see a lot of these things that if you're the glitch speed runs where you can break the memory, where you can just walk through one of the hallways that would take you to somewhere else and it just takes you to like the final area and it's like, yep, there it is, and credits are rolling now, and it's like that's incredible to me.
Do infinite sword glitch so that it's on a stick, so your wooden stick is just
vibrating,
doing 60 master sword hits a second or something like that. Yeah, it's just weird. It's really funny. Like, you know, and there's so much to it because so many people have played that game that there's been so many eyes on it that, like, people know almost everything there is to know about Ocarina at this point. It's just been kind of taken apart.
Except where that darn Triforce is. It's in there.
We still can't find it. It's in there. I saw the video. I saw
it. Where is it?
No.
Either of you guys play the 3D remake of Ocarina?
It's the one that was released on Wii, is that right?
The 3DS.
Then no.
No. Okay, that's
fine. I've seen footage of it. I know what it looks like, and I'm fine with it, but never played.
There's always a debate between, you know, with that and Majora's Mask on, like, okay, the graphics look better on it, but is it actually improved, all of that? But hey, if neither of you played it, we don't have to have that discussion here, so that's
I feel
good.
Like, you know what, with remakes, I think they should go all the way with a remake and give you like a completely modern experience, or like, because I don't want a halfway remake. And I realized at the time that's not what this is. But sitting at this vantage, it's like that remake is pointless to me because it's not that much better than the Ocarina of Time that existed in 1998. But if they gave me a 60 frames per second, you know, gussied up Ocarina of Time, I'd be into it. I'd play it. You know, because it is a little choppy now. You know, like it plays a little raw now.
A little, yeah. I mean, that thing runs, like 18 frames a second? Something
sometimes.
Like that?
Sometimes.
That might be generous. Yeah.
Sometimes. You get in that water temple, it's like 3 frames, and you're pretty mad, you know?
I might actually take a bet with you on whether it's double digits
or
not.
Fair. Yeah, I'm still, I'm coming from it where I'm like, yeah, everything is at least 30, and then you're like, oh, this one's slow, so 25? Is that bad?
But sometimes when you do really cool things, it slows down every time and looks awesome.
Like the Matrix.
Yeah, that's where Zack Snyder got that 300 effect.
Exactly.
That's where he got it.
Zelda games a lot of chunking Zelda. Along.
Yeah. And he was like, wait a minute.
We all know that.
So, anything else we want to talk about in Ocarina? I was also going to just let, if you guys wanted to talk about Tears of the Kingdom for a little bit, we could do that. People like hearing when we talk about that, so.
Tears of the Kingdom will be, at minimum, a very good game.
Okay.
That's the floor. It will be a very good game. Right? I think that's the safest take ever.
Yeah. Because I don't think there are very few Zelda games that don't even meet that requirement.
I think my clan is going to say it's the new best game of all time, and it's going to underperform compared to Breath of the Wild. And we're going to be right. We're going to say, like, well, people just don't understand. That's the issue.
Yeah.
When there's two things, if the artist/artists behind it are very good, which I think they are in this case, there's a pattern that I see almost everywhere. It's true of books, seasons of TV, movie franchises, where like, and it totally makes sense. It's almost the only way it can go, and more interesting when it doesn't go this way. But it's like, the first one is mind-blowingly innovative, and the second one's arguably even better and more refined, but there aren't as many new ideas there.
Right.
Like, that's, you know, seems like the natural way it'll go. And I expect that will be true of this. I feel like a bad Zelda boy, because when you said those words, like, Tears of the Kingdom means nothing to me. But you're talking about Breath of the Wild, too. Yeah, I am excited for that. That does look good.
One thing that seems pretty cool about it, if the trailers are not liars, which they often are in video games, if the trailers are not liars, it does seem like it's a lot more vertical. than Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. And that is an interesting prospect because it's not necessarily the thing I liked about Breath of the Wild. So there's so much possibility there. I'll also add,
I would say it kind of is, because going up with the climbing system and going down with the glider, like up and down, are where my heart was at.
That's true. That was the exciting part, but you didn't. Maybe I should.
The game was
that.
Still wider than it was tall, though.
Very wide. Yes.
In this one, they may be inverting that.
Right. That's correct. That's what it looks like. The other thing that's just sort of interesting to me, and I'm just surprised by it, but I have heard it several times, this is actually the longest we've gone between Zeldas. And that, like, really blew my mind. I was like, really?
Yes. I mean, if you're counting, like, you know, yeah, some of the, you know, 2D ones that we get in between, things like that, like, or whatever, Zelda spinoff or something like that. I guess,
I think mainline.
Well,
mainline
yes,
Zeldas.
Yes.
But we haven't gotten really one of those.
In 6 years.
Since.
It's yeah.
In 6 years.
Yeah.
Which is like, it's funny because now development cycles are so long that it doesn't seem that long to me. It's like, yeah, 6 years. I mean, how long did it take between Red Dead's? 10 years? I don't know. Was I even born when Red Dead 1 came out? I don't know. But like,
is Red Dead 1 even real? Yeah,
my grandpa talked about that game.
I've heard about it. I think it was contemporary, wasn't it, when it came out?
With a spring in his step, too.
Yeah.
No, oh, yeah, it was when it first came out, it was ripped from the
headlines. It was ripped from the headlines. It was GTA.
This is happening now, y'all. Yeah.
It was just...
He bought it for 5 straw pennies.
It came out in the under the title Real Life Sim, and then they've changed it for subsequent audiences. No, but I think it's weird that it's been that long since Breath of the Wild, and like that actually gives me more hope for what they're going to deliver. You know,
yes,
because it's
absolutely.
Like, oh, there's actually, if they've spent this amount of time on it, and we know they're still using Breath of the Wild's engine and a lot of its resources, I want to say, and assets, then like they must really believe in this because they spent a lot of time and waited to deliver it, and they're pretty precious about Zelda, so maybe it's okay to get super hyped. Maybe that's all right.
And I think it's actually a good sign that they're staying within the same engine, because
agreed.
Whenever a developer does that, it's like, we know this engine inside out now. We could push it further. Mm-hmm.
We find new things.
Versus if they switch engines, the graphics may be better, but they're relearning the whole thing in some way, and I don't think they can get the refinement as far as quickly.
My hope is that we've waited this long, and having followed Zelda the way we have, and we do these deep dives and look into the history of a lot of these Zelda games, there's always cut content. We always talk about how Wind Waker was cut short, and then some of that stuff was carried over to Twilight Princess. You know, there were things that were left out on and that's a standard Nintendo thing, right? Where they didn't put everything on there, so they're going to carry it over to the next game, right? And my hope is that nothing is on the cutting room floor for this, and that's why it's taking so long. And also that maybe this is where they were like, okay, this Breath of the Wild was such a hit. You can do whatever you want and take as much time as you want with this game. But I'm also going to guess after Tears of the Kingdom, Zelda is going to get a whole other refresh again. That this will be like the last we see of this type of Zelda. That we're going to get this
formula.
And then
with the temples and the physics puzzles.
Yeah, I think just in general, like, because you can follow along where Twilight Princess was a different case, where that was more of a response to how people felt about Wind Waker, where they made it more like, well, let's do it like Ocarina. They liked Ocarina. But for
Great. They tend to do two and then move
they
on.
They tend to pivot after true. That.
Sometimes not even two. Yeah, sometimes it's like, we'll do one way and that's it. You know, that's Miyamoto, where he's just like, why would you make a sequel that's very much like the other game? If you're going to do more in that world, it has to be a different game. Right. And it's like, okay, old man.
But every once in a while, like when they have a big enough hit, the powers that be are like,
make two.
Got to squeeze out.
Okay, we need one more.
Man,
we need one more.
This was a good one. Yeah.
Well, also hardware limitations, right? Like, so the Switch, they happen to be on what is probably the tail end of the Switch life cycle, but don't have a new system announced yet. So they either got to hold on to it for another couple years or like they drop it now. You know what I mean?
I'm guessing not. I'm guessing a few months after Tears of the Kingdom comes out, Nintendo actually starts talking about whatever their next hardware is. They're not. They're not, I don't
publicly
think
they're talking about it.
Publicly. I think we're you know, because that's getting us. That's around E3. It's not going to be close, but you know they kind of break off from there. Brian, you're looking at me like I don't always make predictions like this. I'm always saying okay, stuff
fine,
like
fine,
this.
Fine. I'm just looking at you because I remember us talking about the NX on other podcasts that we were doing at the time, and just the way that all rolled out was just so confusing and at the last minute sort of thing.
It was
so,
in
March,
right? Just like out
anything.
Of nowhere, they just announced it. Or no, it was.
I mean, they finally changed the name in like October, and like 5 months away.
So just two other details that I think are dovetailed with this. There's been such a clamor for Odyssey 2 that I have a feeling Odyssey 2 is either going to happen or is going to be a part of whatever that next cycle is. Also, for a very brief period of time, you could pre-order Metroid Prime 4 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those two games is going to be the launch title for, you know, Switch 2 Tears of the Kingdom. Whatever Switch 2 Tears of the Kingdom is.
I will just say with the whole Odyssey 2 thing, we have only, like, Galaxy 2 is the only direct Mario sequel that we've seen since the original NES. Yeah. Like everything else for Mario, you get one big Mario game per
Super
console.
Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island.
It's a spinoff. It's like, yeah, it's...
But it's a Super Mario World 2.
You know what I mean.
They didn't have as long a console cycles back then. You know,
that's true.
I don't even think that they're going to make a sequel that's called Mario Odyssey 2. I just mean next mainline Mario, I think.
I want it so bad. I do want that so bad.
And they're releasing the movie.
Is there a lot of buzz for it?
I thought you were talking about Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
I just never hear anyone going like, where's Odyssey 2? Like, and maybe it's just that same way where I'm like, well, obviously we all want another Mario game, but like. The last couple of years ago, people were like, nope, they're going to come out that they're working on Donkey Kong, actually, not a new Mario. The Mario team's on a Donkey Kong game. And it was like, please, if you make that real just by saying it, like, no, don't say
There's
that.
The Star
I don't
Fox
hear those
F-Zero
words.
Game and the Donkey Kong game.
None of those are going to happen. But they are, as I understand. I mean, first of all, that Mario movie's coming out this year. And I believe there's a Nintendo World launch this year. I'm just saying, I think that. They're not totally bereft of planning for lining up properties. I'm just telling you.
Maybe they're just like, let's just wait till Zelda's out like they did last time. And then in 6 months, you'll get your Mario game, or we'll show you a little bit of
But like, there was the leak of the Tears of the Kingdom themed OLED. So again, hardware wise, we're going to have that come out, and then Nintendo is going to wait a good 6 months before they start talking about any other hardware thing. That's going to be the thing to sell, even though it's going to sell out immediately anyway. But anyways, if you guys have anything else to say about Tears of the Kingdom, go ahead. I'm good arguing about what is going to happen. We've done this so many times in the past and are rarely right.
I hope it's as good as Starfield, and I hope both are good.
Starfield had me, and then they double had me when I saw the jetpack. So I think as far as like how this will get received, it will be exactly the way it is every time. Everyone will love it. It will get tens or perfect scores or near perfect scores. If there is a little bit of that, like, well, it's clearly Assassin's Creed 2 is building off of 1, but like, look how, people will make excuses like they do every Zelda game for like, no, this is why this is still a 10 out of 10 sort of thing. And then in 3 or 4 years, everyone will be like, no, it's not.
It's
the best.
It's an eight.
It happened with Breath of the Wild too. So like, as well. So, I think it'll just, the Zelda thing will happen again. And
hopefully we'll know in a few more months unless they delay it again, but we'll see. Let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Adam.
Yeah. Thank you so much for stopping by.
What a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for thinking of us.
We had a great time.
Really.
So thank you, listeners. And, next time you hear from us, we're going to be playing Star Fox Adventures. for the GameCube. Woo! So enjoy that.
Every other season is a Zelda. Oh yeah, you got any Zelda likes besides Dark Cloud to shout out? Because we play a Zelda game and then we play a Zelda like.
A little known game called Dark Souls. Big fan of Dark Souls.
Oh yeah,
it's very similar to Zelda, but hard. You know.
In recent memory, I go Death's Door, which probably hit by now, but I'll just say Death's Door over Tunic forever.
Oh, 100%.
Infinity.
100%.
That's the hot take for tonight.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next time.